The 2015 FIFA World Cup in Canada is one of the main reasons why the women's game is where it is now. The Lionesses' third place finish in that tournament managed to grab everyone's attention despite the time difference. One of the key fixtures in that England team was defender Laura Bassett, who helped forge a strong central defensive partnership with captain Steph Horton, particularly at that 2015 World Cup and in the Euros 2 years later. But this is a defender who knows exactly how the highs and lows can go in a tournament. England went out to Japan in the semi-finals in 2015 after conceding a last-minute Japanese goal that was deflected by Laura over the head of goalkeeper Karen Bardsley. It's a game Laura still hasn't watched back. But as we brace ourselves for the latest edition of the World Cup in France, Laura gives us a valuable insight into how you have to manage yourself during these major tournaments. She also gives us her own predictions for France 2019, including who could be a breakout star and who might be the underdog to watch. We recorded this interview back during the She Believes Cup tournament earlier this year, and as she officially announced her retirement today, that's Monday, June the 3rd, we did also have time to talk about being a new mum and setting up her new life in Orlando. Welcome to the second of our Sportspiel World Cup specials. Laura, it is a very warm welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for being part of our Women's World Cup specials as well. How is everything?
Yeah, everything's good at the minute. My daughter's 3 months old, so I'm just coming up for fresh air. Very new to motherhood. I think it's going okay. A little bit more sleep would be nice, but I'm not too sure if that's coming anytime soon.
Exactly, yeah. And we were talking just before we started recording that it's 3 months to the day, as we record, since your daughter was born. How has everything been, being a parent for the first time?
Yeah, pretty manic and hectic. I don't think anything can prepare you for it. Obviously, you can imagine in the past I've been through quite rigorous training regimes and travelled the world and been through good times, bad times, but nothing can quite prepare you for motherhood, you can't. But I think you try and transfer some of the life lessons that you've learned and, yeah, just try and stay positive, although maybe lasting a day on a couple of hours sleep.
It's the lack of sleep, I think, gets most people.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think those devil hours between 1 and 4 in the morning, you should only see them hours maybe if you've been on a night out or if you're going to the airport on holiday. Apart from those two reasons, I don't think you should ever see those devil hours, but babies tend to like those hours.
Exactly. And of course, your other half, Mark Skinner, of course, has just gone out to be Orlando Pride's new head coach, and he's setting up pre-season, all that sort of stuff. There's also the home life aspect, and soon you'll be joining him in Orlando, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. All very exciting. I think they say the most stressful things in life is maybe having a baby, moving house and moving country. So yeah, we've ticked those boxes in a couple of months. But yeah, Mark's over there, loving life at the minute, loving the warmer climate too. I think he was burnt after the first day, so I've sent him some zinc over that I got from Australia and told him to layer that on. But yeah, he's all excited. Pre-season actually starts today, so he's raring to go. And yeah, hopefully me and Sadie will join him in April. So very exciting times ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And stock up on the Factor 50 sunscreen as well. So on to, I suppose, the matter at hand then, and the reason we're doing these specials in the first place is, of course, the Women's World Cup, which is held in France this year from June the 7th to July the 7th. Obviously, you've got your own experiences with England in major competitions as well, which need no introduction. So I'll kick off then with the Lionesses. And as we record, the team have just played two games of the She Believes Cup, a 2-1 win over Brazil and a 2-2 draw with the US. So how do you see that the team is currently shaping up ahead of the tournament in June?
Yeah, I think they're in great shape, to be honest. I think they're shaping up nicely. I think they're doing so well in the She Believes at the moment, and I think they've got every chance of beating Japan in their final game tomorrow night. And I think that it's shaping up nicely because I think the She Believes is as a player, as staff, you treat it like it's the next thing to a European Championships or a World Cup, because you have to move state and move hotel after each game. So you're used to travelling, which the national team will have to do in the World Cup this year. So it's kind of a mini rehearsal, and they've picked up some great results so far. I think they've got, with big players missing, Jade Moore still missing, Jill Scott and Millie Bright, who have got a lot of, especially Jill Scott and Jade Moore, have got a lot of wealth of tournament experience. So to add that into their mix too, they're really shaping up nicely, and the youth and the enthusiasm that they've got with some of the younger players too, who are showing performances beyond their years, is really impressive.
Is that maybe one of the bigger difference between this squad and the 2015 squad, is that there seems to be such a wealth of options now? Because you list some of the players that are injured there, and then there's also the likes of Jordan Nobbs, who's going to miss the tournament anyway through injury herself. But there seems to be a lot more, or a bigger pool of talent to step in and replace those players.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's maybe a byproduct of how competitive our WSL league is. Although we have got a heavy foreign influx, especially with the top teams, I think now some of the younger players, for example, Georgia Stanway, who plays for Man City, the amount of experience and big games and the finals that she's been exposed to, you need to play in those games, and that will help you on the international stage. So that's why I think we've seen the likes of her doing so well with the seniors. I think you're right, it helps with the depth we have in our squad now. So although you do miss those big players when they don't play, the difference between the top players with that experience and the younger player isn't that big. I think they come in, the young players now have a confidence and an aura that then they're fearless, which I think we haven't had that for the past few years. So it's brilliant to see.
What then constitutes success for England this time around?
I think it has to be get to the final, and we have to want to win it. I think the success in the last two major tournaments, we've reached the semi-final stage. So to get into that final, and we all know anything can happen into a final, but to get there, I think that has to be success, and we definitely, I know that speaking from the players still, and Phil Neville's quite explicit when he said he's going there to win it, and that's brilliant to hear. But like I said, for the last two tournaments now, 2015, 2017 in the Euros, we've reached that semi-final stage. So now to really push on and get ourselves into the final, that's going to be, like I say, get into the final and win it.
Exactly. And two semi-finals now on the bounce in major tournaments. It seems to be like the next step up, I suppose. Going back to 2015, where, of course, England won bronze and you were part of that team, and people said that tournament was sort of a turning point for women's football in this country, or certainly the perception of it, and maybe in terms of attendance as well. Did it feel like that at the time?
I think we said before, I don't think we realised what was going on quite back home, because being in Canada, there was a time difference. I think back in England, the games were late at night, so we really didn't expect people, we didn't know that people were staying up and kind of jumping on our journey and enjoying the ride with us. So I think when you're over there, I think when you're away with a national team in a tournament, you are in this bubble, and you're kept in the bubble, which is good, because you need to. I think, you need to, certain players, it just depends on what type of person you are, but some players like to stay on social media, some players like to get off it, and some players like to read the newspapers and the internet, some players don't. So I think you're, and to a certain extent to the team, you are encouraged to remain in the bubble, because it helps you stay focused, it helps you take it game by game and not look too far ahead to that final destination. So we were aware, and we spoke to families and people back home who have always supported us in women's football, but I think we're oblivious to how big it had got and how excited everyone was by what we were achieving.
Yeah, and you mentioned that being in that bubble of a major tournament. How did you approach that? Were you the type of person that liked to stay connected on social media, or did you prefer to take a step back a little bit?
I think take a step back and just kind of go. I know who my go-to people were, my family, and I've got a couple of friends, my boyfriend, who have seen me. They know my personality. They know what I need at certain points. So they're my go-to people. I think you have to, who your support system is, and stay true and loyal to who you are. So I think maybe, yeah, I think especially after what happened in the semi-final happened to me, I think that was the best thing just to stay off, although the outpouring that I received was absolutely, you know, so incredible, the support that I had. So you just have to be mature about how you use networks like that and know the good and bad sides to it.
Yeah, and you mentioned what happened in that semi-final. Of course, everyone knows that what happened in the 92nd minute in the own goal in that semi-final and the outpouring of support on social media. But I think I read a piece relatively recently in the BBC, that whenever a big tournament comes around, be it even the Men's World Cup last year, do those memories still come up a little bit?
Yeah, of course they do. And I think... I haven't watched that. I was thinking about this the other day, and I still haven't watched that England Japan game back. And I think I've spoke to a few different managers and players, and in game situations. But I think that Pep Guardiola hasn't watched a final back. And I know that my boyfriend, when he was manager of Birmingham, they lost to Man City. He hasn't watched that game back either when they played at Wembley in the FA Cup final. And I haven't watched that game back. So it's really interesting the kind of approach you have to different things, I think, but certainly all the memories do come back from the tournaments, maybe on and off the field, but it is a real joy that the fact that we can come away from that World Cup and we've got a medal to show for it. So for all those memories, you can look at that medal and it brings back pride, really, I think, and something to show for it. When you go into visit schools especially, you can show your cap and your medal, and then try and inspire the young children trying to grow up and be footballers or be sports people.
Yeah, and you mentioned there the memories, of which there are a lot, particularly in that competition. But can even the current crop use what happened there, and maybe in 2017 at the Euros as well, as motivation to go and do that again, so that they can have something to look at?
Yeah, I think some of the players in the squad now, I think, would have been back home watching it on TV and maybe getting caught up in the hype, which is brilliant, and now they can be a part of it and make a difference and get England even further. So I'm sure they'd be inspired and motivated by that, which is brilliant.
And since 2017, the landscape almost seems to have completely changed in terms of domestic women's football, because we've now got the fully professional WSL top tier. How much of a difference does that make to the national team?
Yeah, it's incredible. I think, like you say, what happens on a national, international level, if you're successful, then it filters down. And like you say, now we have a fully professional league, so it filters down. But also, I think, still as international players, I think you have a responsibility to try and push those boundaries. If you're successful, then all the rest comes with it. Maybe the sponsorship, the marketing, the funding, all that comes with it. So I think a lot of international players especially know that they have a responsibility on their shoulders to make the nation proud and to also keep opening doors for women's football, and the new crop of players coming through. You want to leave women's football in a better place, and I think a lot of international players do carry that responsibility on their shoulders makes them perform better.
Yeah, and it seems weird saying that now as well, when you consider what happened to your club, Notts County, shortly after the Euros, and them obviously folding, and you had a number of international players in that team as well. But is there maybe more of a financial security behind a lot of the clubs that are currently in the WSL now?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's something that the FA, because it still is the league owned by the FA and still governed by the FA, so I think that's even more. I think that was just a reminder, a bump in the road, shall we say, and it happened before the Euro, so a lot of players, it put them in a delicate situation going into a major tournament. But yeah, I think it was a bump in the road and a big reminder to everybody that, you know, we need to double check if we're going to try and expand the league. We need to make sure that the finances are there, that there is a business plan in place, and we are making steady progression rather than, you know, jumping two steps ahead of where we may be. We need to just make sure that it's secure, so that we don't have a situation like we did.
Yeah, and it gives us the building blocks, I suppose, for the league to grow and for more and more players to come over here as well. How important is it having players, not just the quality players coming over to these shores, but maybe some of our domestic players going abroad as well? Because you've got Izzy Christiansen
Lucy Bronze, both at Lyon, Tony Duggan at Barcelona, to have just three examples. Does that help with the experience when it comes to tournament time as well?
Yeah, I think it does, and I think it breaks down barriers. I know I've spoken to Lucy Bronze in the past, and because she was the first player that went to Lyon, and then Izzy joined after her. But all of a sudden, you're playing with top internationals from other nations and training with them every day, and you get a little insight, and you kind of break down these perceptions that maybe, you know, Morazan's the best player in the world, and Renard, and you actually kind of break down this perception that when you come before, we've never had conversations, or no one's been able to relate to them. But yes, I think it's really helpful for foreign players to come and play in the WSL, but also for English players to go and experience that abroad. I know personally going to play in Australia for the W League was a great, I think as a person, you really learn to grow up, live in a different culture and mix with different players and learn about how they see football and how they see the different approaches to training and S&C and recovery and have just experience something different. And I know, like you said, Izzy, Lucy and Tony are exactly experiencing that, a different style of playing. And then I think when you come back with the national team, you can share those experiences and have those conversations. And also you learn a lot about, because you're playing with different international players, you learn a lot about their characters, their personalities and how they see football. So I think it can only enhance what we already know, and you get a better insight. So I think it's brilliant.
Absolutely. And when it comes to being away at a major tournament, I know we talked about the social media side of things already, but what kind of atmosphere and what kind of dynamic are you trying to create as a group, really, away from the pitch? What's Phil Neville going to be looking for this time around?
I think a happy environment, and that's easier said than done. I think when you're on the pitch and on the training, it's so serious and focused and you know, you're there to do a job, and you have a lot of pressure on yourselves. And I think away from the pitch, you need to relax, enjoy yourself, whatever that may be, go and experience. I know a lot of the girls, we all like to have a coffee. I'm sure we're experts and connoisseurs of coffee, the amount that we've drunk over the years. I think if you're a happy person and you feel motivated and valued and a part of something, and you're having a good time, you're going to translate that onto the pitch, onto the training pitch, onto, you know, the game. So I think it's just that kind of balance, you know, the balance of when's the time to switch on, work hard and really take things serious and really try and push each other, to then the balance of the complete opposite, that don't take yourself so seriously, enjoy, be happy, be surrounded by family and friends and feel supported and just feel normal, just feel, you know, take a break from all the in-depth football that you're going to be surrounded with.
Was that easy for you to find that right balance? Because, I mean, you also strike me as someone who might find that time away from family, because obviously you're so close to your family, maybe the more challenging bit of being away for a tournament?
Yeah, I think it helps with age. I think it helps with the more tournaments you've been to. I think as you get older, you know yourself a little bit more. So I know some personalities might get that headspace by reading a book. Sometimes it might be going for a walk. Sometimes it might be going for a coffee. Sometimes it might be, you know, sitting on a bike or going for a swim. So I think as you get older, you know yourself more. You know where you get that headspace from and what fulfills you. I think when you're younger and you go to your first tournament, you just want to be in the mix of everything and you just want to be here, there, do everything. I think then you become mentally and physically shattered. And maybe, yeah, just take everything in too much. But I think as you get older, you know yourself more and you know how to, if you're maybe having a bad day or you are homesick and you are missing people, then I think you know how to recharge those batteries, which is imperative.
Yeah, because it often seems to be forgotten how important it is to zone out and switch off just as much as it is important to be switched on and at it all the time.
Yeah, totally right.
So then, as someone who's been there, what is it like and what's it going to be like for a lot of the new or newer players to actually step out onto a football pitch at the World Cup playing for your country?
Yeah, it's just amazing. I think it's brilliant now. I think over the years, more family and friends, and especially with this World Cup being in France, it's you know, easy to get there. Whereas being in Canada, the World Cup before wasn't, you know, it's obviously a lot more expensive and further away and more time off work maybe needed. But hopefully a lot of family and friends will be there to support. So to walk out, sing your national anthem, knowing that your family and friends are in the crowd and just seeing bums on seats, the stadiums full, the buzz you get. You know, I'll never forget the game that we played in 2015 in the quarterfinals against Canada. I think there was 50,000 people in that stadium, and every time Canada touched the ball, the uproar. And I think when England touched the ball, it was so definitely quiet. So there's just the, you know, we have a great league in England. And, you know, from where we've come from, you know, we're getting regular now, 800 to 1,000 people supporting. But compare that to a World Cup where you are getting thousands and thousands watching you and being there and just being so excited by watching you play. You just can't beat that feeling.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone I've spoken to as well seems to be really looking forward to that very first game as well. Perhaps because it's England-Scotland, Scotland at their first World Cup. Likewise, do you have a lot of excitement for when that first game actually comes around?
Yeah, that's right. And with the added bonus, it's similar to 2017. That was our first game in the group as well. Hopefully we get that scoreline again. So it was victorious to England, so hopefully we get it again. But yeah, the first game as well, the nerves, the expectation. And also from a player's point of view, you spent so long trying to be picked in the final squad. And then when you're in the final squad, you go to preparation camps. And you spend so many hours, you know, in the gym, on the pitch and everything. That first game, it feels like everything's geared towards that. And you kind of look back and how you know, proud you are of yourself for getting there, being there. But now exactly what you want to do. So when that first game, it really just feel like it's there, it's real, and that you've been waiting. You know, some of these players will have been waiting 4 years since the last World Cup. So it's a long time that for a footballer. But yeah, as soon as that first whistle goes on the first game, it really does feel like, yeah, we're in it, we're here to do a job, and let's do it.
Yeah, and that's when it's all guns blazing, essentially. Considering what 2015 did for coverage, sponsorship, whatever, does this tournament feel similarly important for helping to push that forward?
Yeah, I think so. Like we've already said, how England have done so well compared to where we've come from for the last two tournaments to get to the semi-finals. But to go that one step further, to get everybody excited in England about getting to a final and potentially winning it, I think it would be massive. I think we'd see a bigger influx from grassroots, even more girls playing football and wanting to get involved, even more women. There's so many pathways now for women, for walking football, for example, but to really just participate. And I think if we see that from the grassroots, it can only help us in future. So again, and I just think that success on an international level really encourages even more sponsorship, more funding, more marketing, more exposure and media. And I think our players are seeing that. I think with every single tournament now, there's more media, there's more kind of commitments from that side away from the pitch. And it's interesting because it hasn't always been there. So for them players, the older players maybe, you know, it's really great to see to be involved with that, because you can see the development. And like I say, it hasn't always been there, but it's certainly brilliant that there's a buzz in the country now, especially after the Men's World Cup last year. Everyone enjoyed that so much that now I think they're ready. You know, the England, we're ready for another tournament already, and to get the success on the women's side would be brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of the fans certainly are ready for a tournament as well, because a lot of us, I think, miss what happened in the summer, just gone. In terms of, as well, the team, players, and that responsibility of being role models and perhaps paving the way for others to actually get into the sport, and this is where I bring in your role with the Mintridge Foundation as well, and the work you do with that organisation, who are obviously big friends of ours. Is that an easy responsibility to take on, perhaps knowing that every action you complete or do on a football pitch, somewhere else there's a child perhaps watching, thinking, I could be Laura Bassett one day?
Yeah, I think it's, as a person, I think it's a great responsibility, and I think it's one that we enjoy. But then also, you know, we're not all perfect. We are human and we will make mistakes. So maybe when, unfortunately, you do shout at the referee or, you know, get sent off or whatever, you hope that that isn't mimicked. But you are elite performers. You spend day in, day out training and wanting to win. So sometimes you do cross that line. You do get over aroused and make poor judgments and decisions. So it is hard. It's certainly not easy. It's one that you are privileged to be, and like you say, the work with Mintridge and being a mentor, it's maybe easier away from the pitch because you're fully in control of your, although you are on the pitch, with it's easier off the pitch because you can have conversations, you can really make an impact, and you have time to tell your stories and you know, pass on your messages and your lessons learned. So it is a really big responsibility, and it's certainly easier said than done.
Yeah, and it definitely seems to be a role that you enjoy as well, first and foremost.
Yeah, it is, I think, because I think growing up, I think all my role models, my dad and my brother are really big role models to me in sport, and my mother, who was a fixer secretary for a local football club. And I just don't think growing up, I don't think not many mums were fixer secretaries for a football club. So yeah, they're all strong role models. And I think growing up, they were all male footballers. So to now have access to female footballers, and so maybe for young aspiring girls growing, they can ask questions, they can maybe, you know, they feel like maybe they can reach out to someone who's got a similar journey to them, I think can only help them grow and develop.
Yeah, and it teaches them that anything is possible, should you put your mind to it, which is obviously a message we are all for. I'll finish up then with some quick fire tournament questions, if you like. So
okay.
I'll try not to catch you out too much. But first one, player to watch at the tournament.
Well, obviously, I'd like to name all of the England Lionesses. All of them you have to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Sam Kerr from Australia, the centre forward, I think she's been sensational in the W League for Perth Glory and in the American League, the NWSL for her team Chicago. She's certainly a player to watch, a fast, dynamic forward.
Yeah, and her goal scoring record is off the charts recently as well.
Mm, yeah, that's right.
Breakout star from the tournament.
Oh, breakout star. That is a good one. That is a good one. I want to go Nikita Paris from England. I'm going to, not that she's a breakout star, I mean, she's certainly had experience, but I think this is the tournament that Nikita really stamps her authority and takes her game and her profile to the next level.
Yeah, no, I'll back that one as well, because obviously she's got the WSL scoring record as well, so that would tie in beautifully for this year. In terms of teams now, the tournament underdog.
I'm going to stick with Australia because not that they're an underdog, I think people aren't aware of them, but they never really seem to fulfil their potential. And I think this year, with a change of manager, I think maybe they're doing all right in the Cup of Nations at the minute. I think that this might be the year that they really take that extra step. Mm-hmm. and make the finals. Yeah. So not that they're an underdog, I know that, but I think that we could see a change of mentality and a change on the performances as well.
Yeah, exactly. And last one, who is going to win?
England.
Right answer.
Yes,
I'll definitely
course.
Go along with that one.
And so should everyone else be.
Oh yeah, and I mean certainly all of us here on the podcast, and I'm sure plenty of people around the country will be getting on board and getting their England shirts out ready for the tournament. So again, thank you so much, Laura, for coming on to the podcast for our World Cup specials.
No problem.
Wish you all the best as well in your personal life, because you've managed to cram in every possible hectic event in your life into the space of a few months. So again, thank you so much for taking the time out and chatting with us on the podcast.
No problem, anytime.
It's another huge thanks from us to Laura for taking some time out to chat with us, and also to our friends at the Mintridge Foundation for helping set up our conversation in the first place. Again, you can find a written article on this interview with our friends at the Offside Rule podcast. It will be on their website, which you can find at offsiderulepodcast.com. And remember, you can subscribe to their fantastic show as they will be covering the tournament throughout as well. Here at Sportspiel, you can still catch yesterday's opening special episode with Lionesses goalkeeper Mary Earps. It looks to have gone down quite well, so make sure you do tune in and give it a listen. Tomorrow, we hear from one of Mary's former teammates at Reading, as Remy Allen makes her second appearance on this podcast. She will be talking all things World Cup and giving us her own predictions as well. Do remember to give us a rating on the podcast app of your choice. It helps other people find us, and do follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. Our handles are all SportspielPod. With that, listeners, it is a massive thanks for tuning in once again. You'll be hearing more from us tomorrow. We will see you then.